English Listening Comprehension Test, Autumn 2012, Advanced Level. This test is in five parts. Part 5 has separate directions. In parts 1, 2, 3, and 4, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part 1 twice. First, listen to it straight through.
Welcome. Today I'm talking to Zach Rand about advances in weather prediction in Rio de Janeiro. Zach, what's going on in Rio?
Well, you know, in Rio de Janeiro, whenever a massive storm comes in off the Atlantic, like the one did a couple of years ago, remember? Hundreds of lives and thousands of homes can be lost in a single afternoon. But now there's a new state-of-the-art command center, a kind of municipal war room dedicated to making the entire city more efficient. Supercomputers are monitoring the weather via high-powered weather models custom engineered by IBM. The weather modeling project, known as Deep Thunder, informs city leaders and regional agencies of what the skies have in store, square mile by square mile, both in real time and 48 hours into the future.
What's special about this Deep Thunder project?
What makes Deep Thunder and models like it so interesting is what is called coupling. That means the use of weather models to predict not just the weather, but the impacts of weather. Take the example of an electrical distributor. You put in stuff like where its power stations are and where each transformer is. The electric company can then adjust its resources to deal with the threat ahead of time and so restore power faster. That keeps the city humming along.
What problems do these storms cause for Rio de Janeiro?
These large storms can easily dump a foot of rain in 24 hours. That's 250 millimeters of rain in one day. The urban landscape there is unique, with huge shanty neighborhoods built into the very steep hillsides surrounding the city proper. These storms come off the ocean, and potentially the water begins to gather on these steep hillsides, and it leads to mudslides. So the large amount of rain and the flooding is a problem, but ultimately, it's the mudslides that lead to deaths and injuries. And these are particularly concentrated in the poorer areas. In the Rio Data Center, Deep Thunder takes into account city-specific soil composition data, hydrology models, urban flooding models, topographical data, and so on. With the resulting output, city authorities can pinpoint which hillsides are at the greatest risk of mudslides during a certain storm and warn inhabitants accordingly.
Now listen to the same interview in three sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Welcome. Today I'm talking to Zach Rand about advances in weather prediction in Rio de Janeiro. Zach, what's going on in Rio?
Well, you know, in Rio de Janeiro, whenever a massive storm comes in off the Atlantic, like the one did a couple of years ago, remember? Hundreds of lives and thousands of homes can be lost in a single afternoon. But now there's a new state-of-the-art command center, a kind of municipal war room dedicated to making the entire city more efficient. Supercomputers are monitoring the weather via high-powered weather models custom engineered by IBM. The weather modeling project, known as Deep Thunder, informs city leaders and regional agencies of what the skies have in store, square mile by square mile, both in real time and 48 hours into the future.
Answer questions 1 and 2, then look at question 3.
What's special about this Deep Thunder project?
What makes Deep Thunder and models like it so interesting is what is called coupling. That means the use of weather models to predict not just the weather, but the impacts of weather. Take the example of an electrical distributor. You put in stuff like where its power stations are and where each transformer is. The electric company can then adjust its resources to deal with the threat ahead of time and so restore power faster. That keeps the city humming along.
Answer question 3, then look at questions 4 and 5.
What problems do these storms cause for Rio de Janeiro?
These large storms can easily dump a foot of rain in 24 hours. That's 250 millimeters of rain in one day. The urban landscape there is unique, with huge shanty neighborhoods built into the very steep hillsides surrounding the city proper. These storms come off the ocean, and potentially the water begins to gather on these steep hillsides, and it leads to mudslides. So the large amount of rain and the flooding is a problem, but ultimately, it's the mudslides that lead to deaths and injuries. And these are particularly concentrated in the poorer areas. In the Rio Data Center, Deep Thunder takes into account city-specific soil composition data, hydrology models, urban flooding models, topographical data, and so on. With the resulting output, city authorities can pinpoint which hillsides are at the greatest risk of mudslides during a certain storm and warn inhabitants accordingly.
Answer questions 4 and 5. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
We have Philip Johnson here to speak to us about wind farms and why they arouse such controversy here in Britain.
Well, for the thousands of holidaymakers who visit Cornwall each year, there is a particular vista that lifts the spirits after the long and heavy drive. Just south of Bude on the A39, that is, provided the weather is fair, the impressive twin peaks of Brown Willie and Rough Tor rise high above Bodmin Moor. And for those of us who have travelled to this corner of England since childhood, it's a view that has changed little. However, if developers get their way, in a year or so there will be 16 wind turbines, each of them 415 feet high, and that's taller than St Paul's Cathedral, right across this wild and wonderful landscape. And they won't be the last either. As I saw when I visited last week, wind turbines have sprung up all along the route into Cornwall. They're like mushrooms on an autumn morning. And true, they can possess a certain elegance. They're less of an eyesore than coal mines and the resulting heaps of rocks and stones that they produce. And let's face it, our countryside has seen worse. And the arrival of the steam train was greeted with horror as the railways snaked their way across pristine meadows and tunnels were blasted out of the hillsides. The speed of building left contemporaries bewildered. In the 19th century novel Middlemarch, alarmed villagers worry that the railway will tear apart the very economic and social structure of daily life. And the famous writer Dickens likens its impact on North London to an earthquake. Nor was it just the railways. Canals, forts, roads, mines, docks, mobile phone masts, electricity pylons, the new towns, all have ruined the countryside in their own way. So why does everyone get so hot under the collar about wind farms? At the weekend, I was speaking to campaigners who are against the Bodmin Moor scheme, who are gearing up for the public inquiry. And for them, this is an all-consuming issue. In fact, from the Isle of Wight to northern Scotland, local people, mostly from the countryside, are coming together to fight the windmills. The odds, it has to be said, are stacked against them. They're made to feel like they are irrationally screaming against the forces of progress. And worse, others call them names. They're called NIMBYs, you know, not in my backyard. And this name-calling is usually done by environmentalist lobbyists. And these lobbyists know that they will never see a turbine planted in the back garden of their Islington Terrace. The campaigners get no backing from the government whatsoever, since it is in favour of wind power to meet its foolish and reckless renewable energy targets. And nor is support to be expected from the opposition. Landowners love wind turbines because they can make a packet from subsidies and rents for erecting just a few turbines on their property. Other supporters say they are really quite beautiful additions to our countryside and will help save the planet by allowing us to switch from fossil fuels. So what's the big deal? Why don't the protesters just shut up and accept the inevitable? After all, if the early textile factories had been closed, or if railway construction had been prevented, we would still be living off the land. After all, a few years back, the climate change secretary said it should be socially unacceptable to oppose wind farms. There's one fundamental difference between the great projects of the 19th century and today's wind turbines. The latter don't work. The impression is given that since wind is free and doesn't produce CO2, then it must be the answer to our renewable energy problems. If this were true, then it might be worth sacrificing a few views. But it isn't. To produce the same amount of electricity as one single coal-fired power station, you'd need a wind farm larger than the size of Greater London. And when there is no wind, or too much wind, the power produced is minimal, or the turbine even consumes electricity, while fossil fuel stations take up the slack. The sensible policy would be to plough money into nuclear reactors, but the same environmentalist lobby that has, bizarrely, allied itself to big business to push for wind turbines is also opposed to nuclear power. It's the environmentalists, not the opponents of wind farms, who are standing in the way of an energy policy that will benefit us all and protect our landscape.
Now listen to the same talk in five sections. Look at questions 6 and 7.
We have Philip Johnson here to speak to us about wind farms and why they arouse such controversy here in Britain.
Well, for the thousands of holidaymakers who visit Cornwall each year, there is a particular vista that lifts the spirits after the long and heavy drive. Just south of Bude on the A39, that is, provided the weather is fair, the impressive twin peaks of Brown Willey and Rough Tor rise high above Bodmin Moor. And for those of us who have travelled to this corner of England since childhood, it's a view that has changed little. However, if developers get their way, in a year or so, there will be 16 wind turbines, each of them 415 feet high, and that's taller than St Paul's Cathedral, right across this wild and wonderful landscape. And they won't be the last either.
Answer questions 6 and 7, then look at questions 8 and 9.
As I saw when I visited last week, wind turbines have sprung up all along the route into Cornwall. They're like mushrooms on an autumn morning. And true, they can possess a certain elegance. They're less of an eyesore than coal mines and the resulting heaps of rocks and stones that they produce. And let's face it, our countryside has seen worse. And the arrival of the steam train was greeted with horror, as the railways snaked their way across pristine meadows and tunnels were blasted out of the hillsides. The speed of building left contemporaries bewildered. In the 19th century novel Middlemarch, alarmed villagers worry that the railway will tear apart the very economic and social structure of daily life. And the famous writer Dickens likens its impact on North London to an earthquake. Nor was it just the railways. Canals, forts, roads, mines, docks, mobile phone masts, electricity pylons, the new towns, all have ruined the countryside in their own way. So why does everyone get so hot under the collar about wind farms?
Answer questions 8 and 9. Look at questions 10 and 11.
At the weekend, I was speaking to campaigners who are against the Bodmin Moor scheme, who are gearing up for the public inquiry. And for them, this is an all-consuming issue. In fact, from the Isle of Wight to northern Scotland, local people, mostly from the countryside, are coming together to fight the windmills. The odds, it has to be said, are stacked against them. They're made to feel like they are irrationally screaming against the forces of progress. And worse, others call them names. They're called NIMBYs, you know, not in my backyard. And this name-calling is usually done by environmentalist lobbyists. And these lobbyists know that they will never see a turbine planted in the back garden of their Islington Terrace. The campaigners get no backing from the government whatsoever, since it is in favour of wind power to meet its foolish and reckless renewable energy targets. And nor is support to be expected from the opposition.
Answer questions 10 and 11, then look at questions 12 and 13.
Landowners love wind turbines because they can make a packet from subsidies and rents for erecting just a few turbines on their property. Other supporters say they are really quite beautiful additions to our countryside and will help save the planet by allowing us to switch from fossil fuels. So, what's the big deal? Why don't the protesters just shut up and accept the inevitable? After all, if the early textile factories had been closed, or if railway construction had been prevented, we would still be living off the land. After all, a few years back, the climate change secretary said it should be socially unacceptable to oppose wind farms.
Answer questions 12 and 13. Look at questions 14 and 15.
There's one fundamental difference between the great projects of the 19th century and today's wind turbines. The latter don't work. The impression is given that since wind is free and doesn't produce CO2, then it must be the answer to our renewable energy problems. If this were true, then it might be worth sacrificing a few views, but it isn't. To produce the same amount of electricity as one single coal-fired power station, you'd need a wind farm larger than the size of Greater London. And when there is no wind, or too much wind, the power produced is minimal, or the turbine even consumes electricity, while fossil fuel stations take up the slack. The sensible policy would be to plough money into nuclear reactors. But the same environmentalist lobby that has, bizarrely, allied itself to big business to push for wind turbines is also opposed to nuclear power. It's the environmentalists, not the opponents of wind farms, who are standing in the way of an energy policy that will benefit us all and protect our landscape.
Answer questions 14 and 15. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 16.
The police here in Independence responded to a call last Saturday evening about a large alligator lying beside a pond.
Hey, come on. There are no alligators around here. We're way too far north for alligators.
Yeah, I know. You would think every kid in grade school would know that.
Sure. So, what happened?
The police shot the alligator, and the bullet bounced off.
What?
So, he shot the alligator a second time, and the bullet bounced right off again. The so-called alligator was made of cement. It had been put there to keep children from going near the pond and falling in.
That sounds stupid.
Yeah, but the property owner said it worked fine. The alligator had been there for 5 years, and there hadn't been any problems before last Saturday. Oh, well, ain't life a zoo?
Answer question 16, then look at question 17.
I've always known it.
Oh, known what?
Well, polls don't always tell you everything, you know.
What do you mean?
You know, a social network and dating website asked 30,000 people across 15 countries to name the funniest nationality from all around the world. We Brits came in right in the middle of the poll. Us Brits! And the website's director of marketing is Lloyd Price. And he's British. Wasn't pleased at all. He attempted to cover it up, so no one would notice, I ask you.
Well, I sort of understand, but those results... I mean, just think, we've given the world Monty Python, Fawlty Towers and The Office. I mean, what were people thinking of?
Yeah, and Americans were supposed to be the funniest. Like, no way.
Answer question 17. Look at question 18.
Did you hear about the fireman who rescued a baby bird, an owl, yesterday?
Yeah, Joe told me about it. A baby owl had fallen out of its nest right next to the TV station's webcam. The station called the fire department since the nest is high up on the TV tower.
And the fireman who rescued the bird...
Yeah, I know. The guy's real name is Cage Bird.
He saw the bird was injured, so he threw a towel over it to keep it calm and took it to a veterinary hospital.
And the vet checked it out. By the way, it's back in the nest now.
Answer question 18, then look at question 19.
Have you heard what happened to this woman, Anita Crossley, in Leeds?
No, can't say I have.
Well, a year ago, she had a £1 million business with a ladies-only gym. The gym membership was growing month on month. She had a 7-bedroom home.
And then what happened?
Then the credit crisis hit. So she blamed the banks, said they hadn't given her the proper advice for how to deal with it. The crunch savaged her business, and she's been reduced to living in a garden shed at the bottom of her sister's garden. A shed!
Answer question 19. Look at question 20.
Did you read the link I Twittered you about the angry carpenter?
Yeah. He was called in to fix a door that had been smashed in by a burglar.
And when he was repairing the damage, he cut himself on a piece of glass. And then his DNA was discovered at the crime scene, and the police arrested him.
It's like a bad nightmare. They threw him in jail for over an hour before they realized their mistake.
You would have thought that the forensics would have been carried out before the repairs were made. At least that's what happens on TV shows.
Answer question 20. This is the fourth part of the test. In this part, you will hear five short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 21.
I heard that you slipped up a bit yesterday. Weren't you best man at John and Katie's wedding?
Yes, I was walking up to the front to give my speech and I tripped right in front of 200 guests, fell right on my nose.
But you managed to give your speech, didn't you?
Yes, I did, no problem.
Well, that's good then.
Answer question 21, look at question 22.
Just yesterday, Sally was gathering names on a petition to lower the speed limits around the schools.
Yes, she really wants to protect children crossing the streets. Sally's got a real fighting spirit.
Answer question 22, then look at question 23.
Have you heard about Jane?
Yeah, I've heard that she's expecting her first child and, well, she's already over 40.
I know, but she told me about it herself. And the baby is due next January. She's very excited about it.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Last night I finished writing that paper our boss asked us to do yesterday.
Good, excellent. We were simply stuck on the rough draft yesterday afternoon. There were still too many loose ends in the paper. I was getting a bit desperate we wouldn't get it ready by 10 this morning.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
Do you remember that abandoned property behind the train station?
Do you mean the one near the middle school? That miserable old factory building just around the corner?
Yeah, that one.
What about it?
Well, they've demolished it, and they're going to put in a market there.
Answer question 25. This is the fifth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate announcement. You will hear each section once, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A, listen to this section and then answer the question.
When you think you've heard of everything, then something else comes along. And this week, our trusty bunch of potato farmers have planned protests at Parliament Square. It's all about getting the term couch potato removed from the Oxford English Dictionary and replace with something they believe is a more fitting alternative.
Read question B. Question B. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
Welcome to the Tate Britain Art Museum Ideas Factory Project. Sponsored by Tate and Lyle, we are proud to present an original art and literacy project designed for children. The Ideas Factory focuses on the unique experience of engaging with original works of art as a springboard for developing language skills. Each year, artist educators from Tate Britain work together with primary teachers. And through a series of gallery and school-based workshops, they explore the resources of Tate Britain and develop their responses to the works of art.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
I can think of few things sadder in the summertime than overdone meat. There are a number of tools and methods to combat such tragedies, but perhaps the most novel among these lately is the eye grill. A dual-probe meat thermometer that pairs with a companion iPhone or iPad app via Bluetooth. With an accurate temperature readout in your pocket, you're free to go about your business, checking the temperature occasionally and getting a buzz when your meat reaches a set temperature of your choosing. That's the idea, anyway.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
Attention all passengers. Due to minor difficulties with the running equipment, this train will make an unscheduled stop at the next station, Water Orton. For all those continuing on to Leicester, there will be coaches available in the car park of the station. For those of you transferring at Water Orton, the 11:32 a.m. train to Derby will arrive at Platform 7 some 15 minutes after our arrival. We are sorry for any inconvenience this may have caused you.
Read question E. Question E. Listen to this section and then answer the question.
Basildon Women's Refuge is a charitable organisation providing a refuge for women and their children who have been victims of domestic violence. The refuge offers a chance to seek alternatives to a life of danger, isolation and fear. So just remember, it's not your fault.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.